Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in Judges chapter 8. You know, whenever a war is fought, there's always two battles actually being fought at the same time. For one, there's the war fought on the front lines. But almost as important, and often forgotten, if not more critical, is the battle fought at home. This battle has been referred to by historians as the home front. In World War II, as men went overseas, the nation's women entered the factories to keep the production lines going. Citizens had to grow their own vegetables and raise their own meat so that the government could feed the troops. In addition, surplus metal had to be recycled so that it could be used for ammunition and armor. And the media, as always, needed to be reined in a bit. And popular opinion and morale had to be constantly considered as people sent their loved ones overseas to die on foreign soil. The war at home can sometimes be as trying as the one going on the front lines. And Gideon finds this to be true in Judges 8 in four separate occasions. In verses 1 through 3, he deals with the complaints of one of the 12 tribes, the Ephraimites, after the battle, but learns to act wisely and answer them softly. Next, in verses 4 through 17, he deals with another two Israelite cities who betray his army, and he deals with them severely. Next, in verses 18 through 21, he deals with the responsibility of raising up the next generation despite its reluctance, but in frustrations, decides to take charge and do it all himself anyways. Lastly, in the final verses of the chapter, we see Gideon caving into peer pressure to take his victories and idolize them, making an idol out of his breastplate. Gideon fails the test of idolatry and becomes the very instrument to turn his people away from God again. As preacher Chuck Smith used to say, a good beginning never guarantees a good ending. What should we take away from all these interactions on the war front? Well, just like any battles you face, they take a particular dose of wisdom if they're going to be handled correctly. In my house, we have a game called Bop It. It's a little toy that usually has a strange shape, in our case, BB-8 from Star Wars, and a voice, again, in our case, C-3PO, shouts commands to us, bop it, twist it, pull it. The trick is to know when to do what. In the case of Gideon, we see him pulling things in the beginning in the first situation. He needs to pull the people along with him gently, so he wisely pulls them with him, giving the soft answer to turn away wrath when they say, hey, why didn't you come get us so we could fight with you? And Proverbs dictates that soft answer turns away wrath and is the path to wisdom. So far, so good. In the next situation, as in the case of the betrayal of the two cities, he bops it like he should, dealing with them according to their crimes and punishing them for their lack of brotherhood and hospitality. You see, they didn't want to feed his army as he's pursuing the two evil kings through the land. As he stops into those cities, he says, brothers, help me, give me some food, my army's tired. But they just don't want to, quote, get involved. They'd rather watch on the sidelines and tell him, quote, we're not feeding your army and playing any part in this. Verse 6 tells us they're not sure that Gideon can even win, and it's risky betting on losing horses. So they say, do you already have the hands of Zebah and Zalmunna in your possession? Why should we give bread to your troops? Verse 7, then Gideon replied, just for that, when the Lord has given Zebah and Zalmunna into my hands, I will tear your flesh with desert thorns and briars. Gideon's telling them, when I come back, I'm going to bop it. Both that tower standing there and your bum. See those thorns and briars over there? Get those ready too, because that's what I'm going to use to give you a spanking. In the meantime, I've got a couple Midianite kings to pursue, but like Arnold in a Terminator film, I'll be back. Finally, when he catches up with the two kings, he tries to have his son execute them like the murderers they are. Like a kung fu film, Gideon finds out they killed his brothers. You killed my brothers. Prepare to die. Handing the sword to his son, who we'll see later in the book, he turns out not to be such a great guy. As I was saying, handing the sword to his son, he tries to pass the bloody baton of leadership onto his boy. But his son, no judge and no leader, refuses, not having the stomach for it. If you've ever tried to kill something, you know it's easier in your head than it is in real life. Meanwhile, like Waldorf and Astor, the two grumpy old wisecracking puppets on the Muppet Show, they begin to mock and ridicule Gideon, getting the best of him, and in frustration and pride, he hacks them down himself, failing to train his son to be a man of courage. And later, that'll have drastic consequences. When Gideon should have twisted here, he bopped it instead. This reminds me of my life. Within any short period of time, I can have amazing success with how I handle something, walking in the Spirit, and then 5 minutes later thinking, I got this, and handling something completely wrong, and making a huge disaster. That's why it's extremely important to walk in the Spirit, and as Paul says, keep in step with Him. Just a mere 5 minutes left on my own, and I'm like a 2-year-old with a Sharpie pen, wreaking havoc on my own life. In my defense, I was left unattended. Sadly, this pattern continues in the final passage from verse 22 to verse 27 when Gideon gives in to peer pressure. This time he should have bopped it, but instead he twisted. Verse 22 says, "The Israelites said to Gideon, 'Rule over us, you, your son and grandson, because you have saved us from the hand of Midian.'" Did you catch that? You have saved us. Verse 23 starts off well. Gideon told them, "I will not rule over you, nor will my son rule over you. Let the Lord rule over you." And he said, "I do have one request, that each of you give me an earring from your share of the plunder." It was custom of the Ishmaelites to wear gold earrings. They answered, "We'll be glad to give them." So they spread out a garment, and each one threw a ring from his plunder into it. The weight of the gold rings he asked for came to 1,700 shekels, not counting the ornaments, pendants, and purple garments. Gideon made the gold into an ephod, which he placed in Ophrah, his town. But all Israel prostituted themselves by worshiping it there, and it became a snare to Gideon and his family. We see Gideon dying surrounded by idolatry at the close of this chapter, the people worshiping an ephod or breastplate that was melted down from the gold taken from the two kings in the previous passage. Rather than worshiping God who gave the victory, the people substitute worshiping Gideon's ephod instead. The irony, of course, is that Gideon was a reluctant and fearful man whom God had to convince to go because he'd ensured the victory for him. Human beings are quick to replace God with men. We do it in ministry all the time. Perhaps there's a teacher you like. You begin to idolize him, worshiping the ephod, his ministry, or his books, rather than realizing that that man is human, frail, weak, and nothing without the power of the Holy Spirit. All too readily, like Gideon, we leaders are willing to have it both ways sometimes, to compromise, letting just a little bit of the glory and worship spill onto us because it makes us feel good. And yet God says, "I will share my glory with no one." It doesn't matter who you are. James and John were at least honest enough to sit and ask Jesus for his left and right hand of the throne in glory. The problem was that they were actually asking the Father to move over one seat. "Hey, could you move? Because Jesus, you know, he sits at the Father's right hand." And Jesus turns back to them and says, "Hey, it's not for me to give you that seat." But the reality is, those kinds of seats don't belong to the likes of me and you. Gideon would have done well to stick to his guns and say, "Let the Lord rule over you." And on that, we'll close today. Read Judges chapter 8, and as you do, let the Lord rule over you.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.